The tragedies of one war after another we see replayed, based on deceptions, the news media, far from being the watchdogs, functioning as the lapdogs.
Norman Solomon, syndicated columnist, media critic, and director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, gave two free lectures in Santa Barbara on Saturday while on tour for his latest book, War Made Easy: How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Solomon spoke about his book, which charts the course of pro-war propaganda throughout U.S. history and critiques U.S. news media's complicity in forwarding the executive branch's agenda. Solomon devoted much of his talk to the latest U.S. military campaign in Iraq and the so-called War on Terror, a conflict which he dubbed a war to end all peace. He implicates the media for its negligent reluctance to question government motives for militaristic foreign policy.
The first time I went to Iraq, I went with a very fine freelance independent reporter, Reese Ehrlich, who's reported for the Dallas Morning News, the St. Petersburg Times, freelancing as well for NPR News, Morning Edition, and All Things Considered. And as he later put it, we were talking, and then he wrote this as well, not for those papers, but in a book that we co-authored. He said, American journalists, by and large, when they work overseas, they accept the prerogatives of the U.S. government to intervene militarily. As he put it, U.S. journalists don't win Pulitzers for questioning the U.S. empire. And that's, I think, a fair enough statement.
According to Solomon, the result of the media's failure to serve as a check on government power is an American public that is misinformed and disoriented enough that they themselves will not question their leadership. Solomon advocates challenging commercial media through watchdog groups like Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and he urged the support of independent media outlets as an effective way to address the shortfalls of mainstream media.
We're kept in the dark by news media that put out all kinds of information, misinformation, disinformation, what Paul Krassner calls disinfotainment, all kinds of different ways that we're kept disoriented from the political realities, from the true history unfolding in front of us, and the human consequences. And that, I think, is so key. We need, and we're going to be able to, I think, increasingly, as people in this country who are, to some significant extent, waking up about this war, to challenge the lies of mainstream media, to support independent media, such as KCSB here in Santa Barbara area, to see the vitality that independent, non-corporate, skeptical, journalistic-minded media can bring to the overall media terrain. And some of what we need is the information flow through the body politic, information in real time or soon that's accurate. And we also need analysis that is not the usual talking heads where we're encouraged to believe because they're shouting at each other on cable that decibels equals diversity. It doesn't necessarily. Nor should we believe that the long form means depth. You know, listen to All Things Considered, a Morning Edition, or Fresh Air on public radio. Watch the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. Maybe it's a long discussion. But if the sources are still limited, it doesn't matter how long they talk. The long form doesn't ensure any kind of depth to write home about. And then there's the other aspect of the human reality, and I think we need all three. The human consequences that are usually kept so abstracted by the war makers, by the aiders and abettors in Congress, by the news media. No, this is about real lives. This is about people dying. It's not some wave the flag, blow the trumpets, turn the page, time for a commercial. In 1946, at the time of the Nuremberg trials, Hermann Göring gave an interview. This is what Hermann Göring said. "Why, of course the people don't want war." And then he went on. "But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter to drag the people along. Whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship." And then Herr Göring said the following. "Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to greater danger. It works the same in any country, unquote. Well, it works the same, more or less, but we have elements of democracy in our society. And as I quoted at the beginning, Eduardo Galeano, let's save pessimism for better times. As the great anti-fascist Antonio Gramsci wrote during the time of Mussolini, there's a need for pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. It's possible to stop wars. It's possible to prevent future wars. And part of that process is to challenge the news media, to create the kind of information and analysis flow that we need every day, 24/7, 365. As the journalist, the great independent journalist I.F. Stone said, every government is run by liars, and nothing they say should be believed. He wasn't conflating all governments. He wasn't saying that they're all the same or that governments lie all the time. He was saying that journalism is not real journalism and not to be trusted if the journalistic outlets and the analysts and the reporters trust and take on faith what a government says. And in many ways, in a real sense, the imperative for journalists is the same as the imperative for the rest of us. And that is to be skeptical, to participate in a democracy, not to consume history like it's Wonder Bread to take off the shelf, but to create history. Anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices, Voltaire wrote. The quotation is sometimes rendered with different wording. As long as people believe in absurdities, they will continue to commit atrocities. Either way, a quarter of a millennium later, Voltaire's statement is all too relevant to this moment. As an astute cliché says, truth is the first casualty of war. But another early casualty is conscience. When the huge news outlets swing behind warfare, the dissent propelled by conscience is not deemed to be very newsworthy. The mass media are filled with bright lights and sizzle, with high production values and lower human values, boosting the war effort. And for many Americans, the gap between what they believe and what's on their TV sets is the distance between their truer selves and their fearful passivity. Conscience is not on the military's radar screen, and it's not on our television screen. But government officials and media messages do not define the limits and possibilities of conscience. We do.
In an interview with KCSB News, Solomon expressed skepticism for the notion that the relatively more aggressive news coverage at the outset of Hurricane Katrina necessarily indicates the emergence of a more effective news media in general.
What the media gods giveth, they can taketh away. And coverage that might seem greatly improved because of certain circumstances are not guaranteed to continue in any way, shape, or form. It was, in a sense, you know, the perfect negative storm for the Bush administration around Katrina. But frankly, the coverage could have been a lot better. The reality that you had almost 8,000 National Guard troops from Mississippi and Louisiana who were in Iraq when Hurricane Katrina hit, rather than home. There were a lot of high water vehicles, generators, other heavy equipment that would have been in Louisiana, that was in Iraq instead, that would have been very useful. So you had people who know the terrain, know the communities. They weren't home, you know. And that was not the only tie between the Iraq war and the outrageous criminal neglect on the part of the Bush administration in terms of Katrina. You had on the record the New Orleans Times-Picayune newspaper well over a year before the hurricane hit, and even before, reporting in print quotations from emergency management officials and so forth, saying we wanted levee repair funding from the federal government. This needs to happen. It's a security issue for us. But we're told that the money is not available for this purpose because it's got to be spent on the war in Iraq. Well, that, you know, it's not like hindsight. This was said in the New Orleans Daily Paper, you know, well before. We're talking like early 2004, for instance. And we put a, we and other organizations, the Institute for Public Accuracy, cited that quote, for instance, after the hurricane hit. My point is that there was not sufficient U.S. news media attention to those background facts. And so even though we can praise the media coverage, and it deserves some praise, it certainly could have been a lot better. Whether this kind of tough coverage will continue is a whole other question. I'm very skeptical.
So in your talk, you referenced the madness of militarism. Do you feel that a reformed news media could sufficiently stem the madness? Or does this behavior have deeper cultural roots?
One way to answer that is that I don't think a media reform movement can succeed on its own. That the issue of corporate power is inclusive of, but transcends media issues, you know, that the major media outlets of the country are part of an overall corporatized political economy, and to some extent, what we could call the corporatization of consciousness, people's attitudes, people's assumptions about authority in the economic realm, concentration of capital, the right to wring profits out of people's labor ad infinitum with no limits and disparities between people who are rank-and-file workers and those who are managers, investors, owners, and so forth. And those issues are very much tied in with U.S. foreign policy and the drive for profits and oil and this and that. So I think it is a very good question, and to me, in part, the answer is that we can't solve the problems of the madness of militarism, as Dr. King called it, without dealing with media issues, but not only media issues, because our news media are not what they are simply because there's bad journalistic habits around. It's because of the structure of the economy and the interlock between various parts of the political and economic power structures.
I've talked with people who fully support independent media and recognize it as a worthy cause, but they feel really disheartened, and they ask whether independent media can ever, quote-unquote, win in the face of crushing competition from big conglomerates and this commercialism and corporatization that you're talking about. What do you tell the people that are discouraged?
I suggest they may want to drop by the 7-Eleven and watch people do scratch-off lotto games. The chances of winning are very small, and yet people line up to buy the lotto tickets. Our chances of winning, however one defines that, with independent media are infinitely greater than what you're going to do playing lotto. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if it's worth going and buying lottery tickets, not that I do that, but we may as well engage in the efforts to have meaningful lives in a meaningful society by struggling for social justice, and that would include independent media.
Last, somebody asked you a question, what can I do as an ordinary citizen to support independent media and to challenge mainstream media?
It's important to build independent media outlets and also to challenge the mainstream media. Individuals may choose to focus on one or the other, but in terms of social change, it's important that both of those be addressed. And they're mutually reinforcing. The more we can build independent, non-corporate media outlets, the more there's the capacity to inform ourselves and each other and challenge and critique mainstream media. And the more that we can pressure mainstream media, the more we can create, pardon the expression, a market for truly independent media. So I think those can go hand in hand. I encourage people to go to the Media Watch Group FAIR's website, www.fair.org. You can sign up for an activist email list that gives bulletins for group actions that are being taken around the country to raise issues on breaking news coverage and specific problems with particular media coverage. Also at the Institute for Public Accuracy, we have a website at accuracy.org, and we put out several news releases a week that can be really useful in terms of responding to breaking news and then going to mainstream media and independent media and saying these folks are available, they need to be covered in real time as this crisis is underway or whatever the news development happens to be. More long term, I think that it's very important for us to see ourselves as active rather than passive, And, you know, even the idea of a media activist, it's almost an oxymoron in our culture because media is understood to be something you just consume, you know. And that's, you know, the passivity is encouraged. You're supposed to basically consume media, go out and buy things and maybe vote once in a while. And I think we need to turn that on its head and see media as part of the lifeblood of democracy that we need to create and perpetuate.
Very good. Norm Solomon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Norman Solomon's book tour will continue through the end of October. With KCSB News in Santa Barbara, I'm Heather Buckheim.